Hey, y'all. It's me, Robin. And just real quick before we get to today's episode, if you are loving listening to the podcast, or maybe you don't know because you've just pressed play for the first time ever, but if you like to listen to things in your earbuds, you are going to be so happy to know that Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors is now released as an audiobook. You can get it in Audible or wherever else you get your audiobooks. And of course, you can still get it in print and ebook. If you go to robingoble.com/book, it's going to give you all the options, including that you could order a signed copy from my local bookstore. Alrighty, y'all. Here's that podcast episode you're waiting for.
So when your kid's behavior is baffling, and yours is too sometimes, yeah, I know. Let's take a break from all the bamboozle here on the Baffling Behavior Show.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the Baffling Behavior Show, or the podcast formerly known as Parenting After Trauma. I'm your host, Robin Goble, and you are about to hear the replay of episode 3 from my very popular 3-part series all about boundaries. Yeah, I'm playing podcast replays from now until probably about mid-January. It was kind of a last-minute decision to switch over to replays because, y'all, I'm just tired. I need a little break. I always take a podcast break from about mid-December through mid-January. So really, I just extended it a little bit. With my recent release of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, my new book, this year, y'all, it's been so intense. And I really just realized I need some time to rest and focus on my family and focus on the club and focus on all my being with students. So this week, I've replayed the 3-part boundary series. It started on Monday when I re-aired episode 1, which covered what boundaries really even are. Lots of misconceptions about the word boundary. And the reason that matters is because the way we toss the word boundary around can end up leading to some unnecessary parent shame. So I really framed and rearticulated and defined the word boundary in episode 1. And then in episode 2, which aired on Wednesday of this week, well, re-aired on Wednesday of this week, that episode was all about boundaries that we can give our kids that create success. And now today in this re-aired episode 3, we're going to be talking all about having boundaries with verbal aggression. And today's episode features a very, very special guest, Julianne Taylor Shore. Now, this episode is the most downloaded episode on my podcast by far, which is pretty fascinating because it's really not that old. It aired earlier this year. And so it's been played more times than episodes that have been available for like more than 2 years longer. That's really saying something. The first time I aired this episode, I recorded a pretty long intro. I'm taking that out so we can just get right down to the interview. Here's like the summary of what I said in that really long introduction. Julianne Taylor Shore is amazing. You'll love her. I love her. Julianne has changed my life, and I'm so pleased to introduce her to y'all. Julianne also just published her first book, Setting Boundaries That Stick. And actually, it's not supposed to come out till December. I didn't really time it that way. I just thought a boundaries replay would be a good idea for y'all. So her book is scheduled to come out early December. But actually, I just got mine yesterday. So I think they're already shipping. Setting Boundaries That Stick. This episode about setting boundaries with verbal aggression is going to talk about the concept of psychological boundaries, which I think actually is really crucial in parenting kids with vulnerable nervous systems, big baffling behaviors, and especially attachment trauma. I've really never heard anybody talk about boundaries, and especially psychological boundaries, in the way that Julianne talks about boundaries from a very neurobiologically informed space. I think it's revolutionary, and I think it is so important for parents parenting kids with such vulnerable nervous systems to hear about and consider approaching boundaries from this perspective. But please hear me when I say that if you are in a mutual relationship with another adult and are experiencing verbal aggression, I am not advocating for you to simply strengthen your psychological boundary. But with our minor children, sometimes strengthening our psychological boundary with regards to the verbal aggression that we're experiencing from them is our best or maybe even our only option. Y'all loved this boundary series so much that I created a one-page infographic for download. It's over at robingoble.com/boundary series, and I'll make sure that link makes it into the show notes. Of course, if you need more support setting boundaries through the lens of regulation, connection, and felt safety, grab a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors at robingoble.com/book, or you can now grab Julianne's new book, Setting Boundaries That Stick, which you can find anywhere books are sold online. Alrighty, y'all, here is part 3 of a series all about boundaries with connection with one of my very favorite humans on the whole planet, Julianne Taylor Shore. Julianne, thank you.
I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. I'm so excited for so many reasons. One, just to have this extra opportunity to be with you. Always happy to take those. But what you are talking about and what I've had like the great luxury to be a part of, like kind of in a way watching it unfold for you. Mm-hmm. For is sure. Something that the folks listening to this podcast, I feel pretty confident they won't have heard this described like this in this way before. And obviously I think it's life-changing. I mean, I think it's been life-changing for me. And I think that especially in these circumstances, the circumstance of parenting where we don't have like the ultimate boundary setting as our out, right? Like we don't get to be like, you know what? I think I'm out of this relationship.
No, exactly.
That is tricky to do.
There's a trapped or cornered element to it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There is no ultimate leaving.
No, there is no ultimate leaving. And we say that as if that's easy in adult relationships. That's not easy in adult relationships either. But in this parent-child relationship where there's this very real reality that like, oh, this behavior is bad and I would not accept it from anybody else. Mm-hmm. Yet people are telling me I have to set boundaries. And we can also talk if you want to about how people use that word. So incorrectly, but I did spend a whole episode. So this episode's part of a series and the first one I did covered that. How we're using the word boundaries and what boundaries really are. But it's such a thing that people are saying, right? Like, you have to set better boundaries. And then what I find is that's feeling the parents I work with feeling like actually significantly worse.
Right. Because if you set boundaries well enough, I'm putting that in air quotes in with my fingers right now, then what would be happening is the behavior would change. And if it's not changing, that means you're doing it wrong.
Right, exactly.
Or you're not being strong enough or whatever, which is... Right. Not true.
No. Let's just acknowledge we wish it was true. I wish it was true.
I wish I could control the entire world and make it look exactly like I wanted.
Me too. But alas, this has not worked out for either of us yet, despite our very valiant steps.
Despite every valiant effort, it turns out I cannot control the world.
No. And that boundaries have nothing to do with that.
Right.
So let's start. I actually want to back up a little bit. Tell us like why boundaries, like of all the things, I mean, you're brilliantly talented. You're trained in all the things. You're amazing. Why boundaries? Like what boundaries has become your thing?
So why boundaries is because of what the brain does when it perceives safety. So think of the brain as basically, for now, it's not, it's so much more complicated than this. However, we're going to simplify for this moment. Think of it in basically two states, a more integrated state and a less integrated state. And the more integrated state, when we use the word integration, what do we mean? What I mean is all these neural networks are firing, doing their own thing, processing their own stuff, and they're cross-sharing information with each other. So the more that's happening, the more nuance is available, the more creativity is available, self-soothing. So basically, if I want my brain to be hyper-creative in how it's solving problems and relational and with me in a way that's compassionate, a more integrated state is easier to do that from. Less integration is better when we feel like we're in danger. So when we perceive danger, faster is better. And this cross-sharing of information takes too much time if we're in an actual danger situation. So why boundaries? Well, they add internal protection. And so I can be not in, I don't want to say in charge of, because that would make me in charge or controlling the world, and that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. But I can be a little bit more empowered to increase my perception of safety, regardless of what is happening in the world around me.
Oh, okay, let's say that again. I can be empowered to increase my perception of safety, regardless mm-hmm. of what mm-hmm. is happening in the world around us.
Right.
Which, so I'm just imagining, like, the parents that are listening have mm-hmm. probably two simultaneous reactions to that, like a huge relief mm-hmm. as well as a huge confusion.
Yeah. Like, wait, what?
Is that possible?
Right. Well, how it's possible is two things. One is you can put a pause between your mind and the mind of another person. You can put a little bit of space psychologically between what's happening in front of you and how you're taking it in. The other thing you can do, and who knows, we might talk about this. I'll come back and talk about this one at another moment probably, but you can also put a pause between what you're feeling and what you're doing. And in both of those ways, you're increasing trust in yourself and you're increasing your perception of safety about how you have time to respond to what's going on. Okay, so here's an example. When my kid was like three, she's nine now, but when my kid was like three, she had this thing where she would come into my room in the mornings and like some days she would say, "Good morning, mommy. Mm-hmm. Is it wake up time?" And other times she would walk in and she'd say, "Good morning, mommy. I hate you and I want a new family." Yeah. Ow, except it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
So here's what I mean. I can put a space between my mind and her mind where I don't actually have to guess that everything she's saying is wholly true.
Yes.
Or about me. What? She did use the word you
right.
in the sentence.
Right.
But what's actually going on in that little one is whatever. She's 3 years old. She's probably got a hormonal dump going on that day. Mm-hmm. And she's acting out whatever her body is telling her brain. So a brain is a body's captive audience, right? So it's always going, how are we doing? How we doing? It's like looking at the insides of you all the time. How we doing? What should I do to take care of you? Mm-hmm. And my guess is on a day like that, she has a lot going on in her body. And she's expressing it the only way she knows to the safest person in her world.
Yes.
In this case, I'm the lucky human.
Yeah.
And she's saying this thing, I hate you and I want a new family. And if I take that personally, or like that's an indication that something's really wrong or hard, then I'm likely to go, "Oh, honey, don't say that." Or, "Oh, no, what's wrong?" Or or get really agitated or internally, but not say it out loud. Yeah. Well, fine. Go get a new family.
Right. Right. Right.
Right. Cause I have this anger protection, right?
Yes.
So notice all of those would be coming from a brain that's a little bit more scared mm-hmm. and trapped.
Yes.
Yeah. So when I say a psychological boundary, what I mean is we can just be with the reality of how minds work. Mm. Can I talk about that a little bit? Okay.
Please,
okay.
Yes.
So your neocortex is made up of these six layers of neurons. Mm-hmm. There are these little columns of neurons. They're like right beside each other, one after the other, after the other. Now the bottom two neurons, they get their feed from systems in your brain that are processing what's happening right now. And the top two get their feed from stuff you already know, all your history. Yes. And then all those comes together and the history plus the now come together and they whoop, tell you what reality means to you in this moment through a little packet of information we like to call feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I get to guess what that means to me and make up some stories. That's kind of how we perceive the world. And that's happening in your mind and it's happening in everybody else's mind around you. So in my kid's mind, she's trying to figure out what this information inside her body means to her. And in that moment, her story was, it's the family that's the problem.
Yes.
Now, that's a little picture, a little window into her mind. But it's not a picture of the whole of reality. Make sense?
It makes perfect sense and is also so slippery, right? Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah, like it makes perfect sense. And no.
Yeah.
It's just, I just know that feeling of, yeah, that's the best word that comes up for me. It just can feel really slippery.
It can feel so slippery. And so what we need is time.
Yeah.
And in order to have time, what we need is increased safety. So your brain has a system, and the fancy word for it is the mentalization neural network, but nobody needs to remember that. Basically, you make guesses about what's happening in other people's minds. And in a kiddo, it's in massive development, mm-hmm. but in an adult brain, it's already finished growing. Mm-hmm. And it does the guessing for you really fast in the subcortical parts of your brain, which are those speedy parts in the bottom. And so it's making these guesses of like, oh, wait, what is it that's going on in this other person? And if we can add in to that very fast psychological process, a sense of, oh, wait, everything somebody says, it's not factual. It is very true about whatever's happening inside of them.
Yes.
So I can add the curiosity in as long as I can have a pause. Because curiosity happens in the more integrated brain. And the system also is a little bit of a visual processor. So when I work with folks on it, I tend to help them find an image that is going to create a space between them and another person. So mine is a wall of Jell-O that has pink sparkles in it. And I have no idea why that's true. But it is. Mm-hmm. I've actually never had someone come up with the same image twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That gets ahead of ourselves though a little bit. Can we slow down and just be with this? What if other people's feelings were just them becoming themselves through time? And I don't have to change them for things to be okay.
I'm interrupting the show real quick because if you happen to be a new listener, you might find yourself being a little overwhelmed by all this information. That makes total sense. I mean, there's like 150 episodes plus all the free resources that are available over my website. It's just a lot. So many folks have asked me, where do I start? So I created a separate podcast stream called Start here. What I did is I took the 10 episodes that I want you to listen to first, and that I want you to listen to in this specific order, and I put them into a separate podcast stream so that you don't have to search for them. You can just press play and they'll play one after the other after the other. If you go to robingoble.com/start here, you'll be able to get an invitation to subscribe, and then you'll be able to listen right in the same podcast app you're using right now. robingoble.com/start here.
I'll put a couple different hats on.
Yeah.
It's my therapist hat. I'm like, yes, of course. Jules, of course. That is, makes perfect sense. It's so relieving. I love this.
Yes. Yeah.
Then there's like just the Robin hat of like me doing my real life with my real relationships. I have nothing to do with work. And I'm like, okay, sure. Yeah, that sounds great in theory and basically impossible to actually do. And then I have the hat of like the person who works with these families who is having experiences inside their family that other families couldn't even begin to imagine.
Yeah.
Like the kinds of things that their kids are saying, the intensity of which they're saying it, the frequency even, right? Mm-hmm. The overt like verbal dysregulation that sounds like a screaming, I hate you, you stupid, fat, ugly, cuss, swear word things I'm not going to say on the podcast. And that, and then the intensity of it, like the constant barrage of a verbal assault in a way, as well as what can feel a little less intense in its energy of things like lying and the manipulation and the, the, you know, so as I was getting ready for this podcast, I was thinking about how like it kind of all comes down to that we can't control what comes out of or goes into somebody else's mouth. Because food is also another thing that causes a lot. Food and lying, I think, are almost like the things I hear about the most. So we cannot, there is just in no way could I suggest that we can convince what's coming out of somebody else's mouth. Yet then there is this, what feels kind of uncomfortable space of when I say that to a parent who's being truly assaulted. In their own home. It almost feels like there's this way I'm saying, so sorry. You just have to learn how to deal with being assaulted. And I know that my felt sense of that comes from my own relationship with my own psychological boundaries. But I also know I'm not the only person who's thinking that or feeling that, right? That's like, if I don't figure out a way to make this behavior stop or at least respond in a way that is suggesting I could make it stop, the only other option means I'm just laying down and taking it.
And helpless, hopeless forever. Totally. And this piece is particularly handy in a couple of ways. One is we're acknowledging the reality of your situation. The reality of the situation is, in a lot of these cases, the behavior is big enough that if it were anyone else in your world, you would leave, but you can't. Because this is your child. You can't. And so choosing to stay and be parent, and it doesn't even feel like a choice. There's, and it is a, and I want to acknowledge and honor and be amazed at making that choice every single day and going back and staying and hanging in there and finding love anyway for you and for the kid.
I agree. There is this
like amazing. You are amazing.
Moment by moment, commitment, a choice every moment.
Exactly.
That is amazing.
And to make that a little bit easier, we can feel less hurt by the insults, by the hard words, by the cursing, right? And in that way, as you protect yourself you can actually support your brain in being able to enter a state where more creative and nuanced responses are possible. Mm. And the thing is I actually think the parents who are listening have way better ideas about the doing part than I will ever have, because you live in it every day.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But I want the expertise I have that can be of help is to give you some ideas about how to help your brain be in a state where all those resources you already have are more available to you, even in the heat of a moment. And I also want to be really realistic. In general, when I'm helping people with this, I actually ask them to slow down and go over an event that has already happened and get nuanced with how we're seeing it, insert our psychological boundary there. We're going to do that a ton before you're ever going to be able to do it in real time.
Yes.
Because it takes a lot of practice to be able to do it in real time. And I just want to be super realistic that I never will sell a magic bullet to anybody. I don't have any. This is like, it's hard.
I know. And let's just be clear. That makes us mad.
Oh yeah, like, totally.
Why don't you have the magic bullet that you can just give to us, sell to us? I don't really care the form it comes in, but there's a little, like, we can laugh about it, but there is some genuine anger that comes up around, like, why can't you, the proverbial you, or the you, why can't you just fix this?
Yeah.
And so for everybody listening, I think I just want to acknowledge that. That's like,
oh, yeah.
We are
and if
desperate.
The brain were less complex, or if I had some magic, I would tell you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I want the relief. Yeah, totally. I want there to be relief from this. So the anger feels like totally normal to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while there's not a silver bullet, there is a practice that can help you a lot.
Yes.
And not taking things so personally. It's like the how. I hear people say, don't take things personally, but nobody's telling us how. How do you not take things personally?
And I also think too, and maybe this is all my own projection, but you know, I spend a lot of time with these parents. So I think I understand some of what's happening for them. I think it's so easy to go from, okay, fine, I'll learn how to not take things so personally. But that feels exactly like being helpless. Mm-hmm. Like it's hard to imagine that there's something in between.
Yeah. Well, and what happens as we have a better and better psychological boundary, actually, because my brain is in that safer state, more protected state, let's be realistic. There's only relative safety in your house moment to moment, right? The truth is there may be a moment where things are not actually very safe and you have to be in that more unintegrated brain state. And that's the best thing it would be exactly right. Please do that. And when it is possible, the connection part, the being with part that actually does energetically change things. I mean, in a real way. I mean, that in a palpable way, not in some woo-woo way.
Yes.
It's possible for my brain to enter that state only when I'm more protected. So it's actually a space wherein I can connect more without trying to change the other person. So for example, my kid comes in, she says, Good morning, mommy. I hate you. And I want a new family. Mm-hmm. She says this while smiling and light in her eyes. Mm-hmm. She's trying to mess with me.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So I have my boundary up. And so I know, okay, that boundary gives me like, it's so rapid because it's in the fast part of my brain. It's like before the words even finish coming out, I'm already in a state of curiosity towards what's going on with her. And then instead of countering it, I might go, oh, really? What family would you like to have? And now all of a sudden she's playing with me.
Yes.
And what could have turned into a really hard moment came into a dreaming moment and a her feeling more seen moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that would happen every time. Sometimes I would say that and she'd say, I don't care. And I don't want to talk to you.
Right.
And sometimes I'd say that and she'd go dreaming with me.
Yeah.
And we could even figure out something we could do that could make our family look more like her dream family today and meet her needs a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, part of what I'm hearing you say, and I want to really articulate it, is an aspect of this work and of you know, practicing this boundary is that we're not doing it in an attempt to manipulate what the person does next.
That's right.
Because it's so easy to take something like, oh, that's interesting. Tell me about what this dream family is like. But to do that very deliberately as like a behavioral intervention, right? Like if I respond this way, that will change what she does next. And so removing ourselves from that, oh my gosh, that might be the hardest thing.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm embracing this truth about something, the way the world works.
Yes.
Is I have no control.
Yeah.
And I do have influence.
Yes.
And both are true simultaneously. Yes. But sometimes we want to use that influence to imagine we have more control. And sometimes when that doesn't work, we fall into helplessness and stop using the influence we do have.
Yes.
And so it's the brain state that supports holding the both and of influence, but no control. Oof. That's hard. Isn't that hard? It's so hard to be a human.
It's so hard. And it makes me so mad. And I actually, this is making me giggle. I actually have a podcast episode called Influence, But Not Control.
Oh, that's so amazing.
That's funny. And folks can go listen to that if you want to dive a little deeper into that. It wasn't that long ago, probably last fall. So you can scroll back and find that. And also the reality of like, I record podcast episodes that I need myself.
Yes. All the work I'm doing, I do because I need it.
Of course.
Every single bit of it.
Of course.
Every single bit of it. I'm not like some, oh, I do this amazing every time. No. It is a practice for me, like it's a practice for everybody else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I use my influence not to get you to do something, but to be with you and connect with you, to be with me in a way that doesn't feel so helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal rather than to get you to change.
Right.
It's more likely that you'll stay in that more integrated state. Because now I'm not butting my head up against the reality I can't control that is going to send us into a space where we're like, oh, good. Now it's even worse.
Right.
Right. Because we can send ourselves into a spiral where I'm in self-judgment and I'm in anger and I'm in shame and I'm just kind of riling in there.
Yeah.
Right. And lose that space of compassion. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, I even use this internal boundary with parts of myself.
Sure.
So I could even notice, oh, a part of me is coming up feeling really lost or feeling really helpless. I could even set my jello wall in between that me and that part of me.
Yeah.
And listen to her better. Oh, really? If we go helpless right now, what's the hope there?
Mm-hmm.
And have more compassion for that part of me.
Yes.
Which is wild. That's a wild way to even think about it. But I do that work with folks and it seems to be helpful.
Let's back up a little and talk about just kind of on the practical sense. Like you've talked about the jello wall. And so, let's just back up a little bit in this practical sense of like the space between, you know, this verbal attack or assault or whatever it is, lying, manipulation, whatever it is, the space between that and the integrated response, the ability to like lean towards it with curiosity. So
right.
What happens in that space and how do we do that?
Right. So I think I have two things that the psychological boundary is actually made up of. One is discernment.
Yes.
And the other is listening with acceptance. So discernment. Mm-hmm. So discernment is all about what's true, what's about me.
Yes.
Is it true or not true? Is it about me, not about me? If it is both true and helpful to me, about me, I'm going to let it in.
Yes.
But if either of those is nope, then that's not information about me. It's information about this other person. And my level of curiosity is going to match how close I would like to be to that person. So if I were doing this with a stranger and I didn't really want to get to know them that well, then mm-hmm. I might not have a lot of curiosity about what's going on in their brain.
Right.
But if it's somebody I really care about, I really love, even if I'm having trouble accessing love in that moment,
yes,
right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to up that curiosity about what might be happening in them. And maybe not even in that moment. Sometimes that moment's too hot, but maybe I'll swing back around and move into curiosity later. But so the first thing, the question is, how do you decide what's true and what's not true? I have terrible news that is radical. Only you can know. I don't know what's true for you and what's not true for you.
Yeah. Yeah, so that makes partly, me mad too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah,
just
yeah.
Just so we're clear. Like you know, it's for everyone listening. Like we would like somebody else to be able to
sure.
tell us these things.
So let's imagine you're doing it with me. Let's imagine here I am, I'm a mom, and my kid comes in and says, "Mommy, I hate you and I want a new family." Okay. I'm going to make some guesses even rapidly about what's happening in her mind. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I did something wrong.
Yep.
Oh, no, it's going to be a terrible day.
Yep. Here we go again, kind of feeling.
Here we go again.
Yep.
Here we go again. Oh, my kid really hates me. Mm-hmm. And this family is bad for her.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say I make those guesses. So take them one at a time. Are they true or not true? So is this family actually bad for her? No, actually, I think this family's doing the best it can. Mm-hmm. Does my kid actually hate me? Well, maybe in this moment, but not actually generally. Mm-hmm. No. So no, that's not true. Did I do something wrong? Well, we just woke up, so I can't. Right. I mean, maybe yesterday, but
right.
not this second.
Right.
I do wrong the stuff all the time, like whatever, but not right now. She woke me up saying this, mm-hmm. right? What was the other one I said? I made some sort of guess.
That we're going to have a bad day.
Oh, it's going to be a bad day.
Yep.
Is that absolutely true? No, mm-hmm. probably not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I need to add one more thing.
Yeah.
Because for me, mm-hmm. the other piece that would bring up is... Mm-hmm. I am hateable.
Yeah. And go ahead and put that on the other side of the boundary too. I'm hateable. True or not true. About you, not about you.
Right.
And so here's where I would say, this is my big T truth. I don't think people are hateable.
Yeah.
I think some behaviors are hateable.
Yes.
But I don't think you as a human is hateable.
Yes.
Period. And so that's my truth. And I can't tell you it should be your truth because that would be a boundary violation. Mm. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I can make an offering and you can let it in if you think it's both true and helpful to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So even though my kid is using you in the sentence, it's actually not information about me. And it's not information that's actually that true. It is a lot of information about her and where she is right this second.
Yes.
And that brings us to the second part, listening with acceptance. So here's the thing, is that emotions are actually functional and they are the moment of the self becoming through time. Which I know is a very existential thing to say, but let's think about self more like a river than like a table, right? It's not a kitchen table. The mm-hmm. self is a little bit more mobile than that because mm-hmm. we're active beings that are constantly being influenced by the world around us and changing and learning and growing. So Think of the self like a river. Now, if you went to the edge of the valley every day, the river would look pretty much the same. It would have edges. You would know that's the river. If you spent 20 years away and then went to the edge of the valley and looked down, the river might have shifted enough. It actually even looks like a different river. And how does that happen? Well, if you walk down and stick your hand in the river, you can feel that water flowing moment to moment to moment. And as it does, and as the rains and droughts come, that river is going to change as that water flows. It's going to move. That flow in us is stuff we call thoughts and feelings. So if I say what you are feeling or thinking is absolutely wrong and should not be, what I'm saying is your river isn't right. Rather than bearing witness to the river that is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of radical. I am aware that's a crazy way to think about it. But what it gives me is a gift of listening.
Yes. And I mean, yes, without question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, again, to just give language to what I imagine would come mm-hmm. up for folks is,
yeah.
Holy moly, is that a hard ask?
Yeah, it is.
Right? Like, I mean, I'm a therapist. I bear witness to people's thoughts and feelings and constantly. Like, it's what
and
I
try not to. Right. Try to have a space wherein they can change.
Yes.
But not try to change them.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Okay. That sounds mm-hmm. great in theory. Sure. I do that for a living. And in my real life.
Yeah.
Especially when the other's thoughts and feelings seem real convinced that like mm-hmm. they are giving us data that suggests they are very convinced everything actually is all my fault. I'm doing everything wrong. And if, you know, mm-hmm. like when people are hurling mm-hmm. that at you,
mm-hmm.
holy smokes.
This is a hard practice.
Bearing witness. I mean, yeah. There was a time in my life where I'm sure I said to you, that's not possible. You are actually asking me to do, like, you're tricking me in some way. I'm sure I said mm-hmm. all of these things to you mm-hmm. at some point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, I can now say, oh, it's possible.
It is
possible. It is unbelievably hard.
Like, difficult.
I mean, I had Ed on my podcast, my husband on my podcast last year, and mm-hmm. he talked about his experience with his chronic Lyme and his neuroimmune disorder and mm-hmm. the fact that sometimes his behavior looks a mm-hmm. lot like the kids of the parents mm-hmm. that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's really funny is we could do the exact same podcast about me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my behavior, but we haven't done that yet. So anyway, and you know, and in many ways, this was we didn't talk about boundaries like this, but with those words, but that is what we talked about as mm-hmm. far as my ability to sometimes have enough of an internal, you know, like enough of a psychological boundary and enough of a containing boundary around my own behavior mm-hmm. that despite his behavior, despite what he's saying, despite whatever, mm-hmm. whatever, whatever, that I do have the presence of mind to be like, not about me. Not true. Not about me. All mm-hmm. about him in the inner chaos that he's in. And despite the fact that he's just hurling things at me, mm-hmm. that honestly, somebody else like on the outside looking in would be like, I cannot believe you tolerate that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I've got that voice mm-hmm. in my head. Like,
yeah, yeah.
People say I shouldn't tolerate this behavior.
Let's put that on the outside of your psychological boundary too.
Totally.
Is that true? Is that about you?
Right. No.
Oh no. That's information about them.
That's right? So hard.
And when you, and slow down. Just for folks who are listening, when you move into that thought, oh, I'm witnessing some of the stuff that is coming from the chaos inside, what feelings towards him change?
Oh, all the feelings.
Right.
I mean, I soften. I go compassion. Mm-hmm. I mean, compassion mm-hmm. just
compassion
explodes this because is the level of pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I'm bearing witness to is honestly a level of pain I don't have. I really think I don't have my own felt sense for. And I have plenty.
Mm-hmm.
But that
level? I actually don't think I do. And so compassion first just explodes. Yeah. And then it's so curious. It's like the idea of having a boundary about this behavior, like that becomes completely irrelevant. It's not even about that.
Right.
Which is also what happens, I think, in our work, right? Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to do in our work that there's no need to have a boundary with our clients like that, right? Like, And I will say on that podcast, Ed told me, he gave me a grade, I think, of an F minus and said, I do that about 5% of the time. And you know what? Oh. That's better than four.
That's better than four. And one day it'll be six.
Six. And I really think that him knowing that I'm trying to get to six matters actually almost more than getting to a six.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, that's that choice of like every day I keep choosing to come back and try. And I think that is so impactful. And I think that's really impactful to our kids in a way that they never, my husband can tell me, I'm so grateful you keep choosing to come back. I mean, he's 50 years old. He's got those words. He does a lot of therapy. He can say those things. Great.
Yeah.
Our kids aren't going to say that.
Nope. And you may not get any immediate feedback that any of this is working.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And while it's true I don't have a silver bullet, I think my hope is that this work can support you in making it a little less hard to make that choice again and again and again and again that you're forced into.
Yes.
And that isn't your fault and isn't your kid's fault. And it's coming from pain, you know?
Yeah. And it feels like at this moment, what's coming up for me is that's the space also of this isn't about becoming like helpless and hopeless and just
quote unquote. This is about agency. This is about empowerment. This is about saying, I actually have the ability to protect your mind from mine. I'm not going to tell you your mind is wrong. I can choose not to do that. I can choose to see your mind with a little bit more nuance. And in that way, increase respect and increase trust in you.
Yes.
Right? And I have the right, every bit of right, to protect my mind from your mind. Mm-hmm. And I do not have to take in everything you throw at me. And it takes practice. But when it starts to take hold and you're doing it and it's working, there can be more space and more ease and more peace, even in moments that are really hard.
Yes. That the not taking it in is the place of feeling power. Right. I think just the other day in the club, somebody used the word impotent. Like they just feel so impotent when this is all being hurled at them. And I mean, I get that.
Yes.
And I also get the feeling that until you've really solidly put 2 feet in this space of having the psychological boundary, it does feel like not doing anything, what feels like not doing anything, is synonymous with that, you know, that person used the word impotence. And the truth that actually there's so much power there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm hoping for, is to help folks even in hard, hard situations feel more empowered and more able to protect themselves, even though you can't change the behavior of the person in front of you. I'm a lover of reality. I just want us to embrace what's actually here and then deal with that.
Yeah, theoretically, me too. I know, exactly. So hard.
Catch me on a hard day. and you'll catch me not doing any of these things well.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, for moments. And I would like to make that so clear for people. It's real easy for us to sit behind these microphones and mm-hmm. say all this stuff. And also, mm-hmm. we have real lives with real people in them. And mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. some of those people are challenging. And also, I'm very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Oh, I can be a real pain.
Yeah. But the amount of people who have connected with me or Ed, actually, some people reached out to him directly about how relieving it was mm-hmm. to hear him say that I do this well 5% mm-hmm. of the time.
Yeah.
Like just how perfectly human that is. I've mm-hmm. got a lot of opportunity for growth.
Yeah.
How perfectly human that is. And how, I mean, I'm not going to say that it's enough, mm-hmm. but it's better than 4%. And sometimes yeah. that's all that, sometimes that is enough.
Sometimes that's all we've got.
Yeah.
The thing is that we are, yeah. I think you're doing the best you can.
Yeah.
I think the fact that you're listening to this is you doing everything you can.
Yeah.
So we can even pause here. It, you know what happens on inside of the jello wall? Is self-compassion.
Yes.
Is, whoa, it's hard to have a kiddo who's yelling at me like this.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm not alone. There are other people out there who have kiddos as hard as this, who are dealing with behaviors as hard as this from other family members, who feel like this is a really hard choice every day.
Yeah.
Right? So to, on the inside of the psychological boundary, whatever your image ends up being one day, right, is it just an ocean of compassion and recognition that you're trying.
Yeah. Yeah. And how painful it is to regularly be confronted with these mm-hmm. old stories, right? Mm-hmm. That like if I'm worried that what mm-hmm. my kid is saying to me means I actually am hateable, mm-hmm. you know, that comes from a place that has nothing to do with my kid.
Yeah.
And to have so much compassion for that part, mm-hmm. that part of me who's ever felt that way or ever
who learned that
way, learned that maybe mm-hmm. it was true. Mm-hmm. And to have to be put in situations, you know, hour after hour, moment after moment, where I have to revisit that mm-hmm. is so painful.
Yeah. Yeah. So having a ton of compassion.
Yeah.
For the thread of that part of your history being pulled again and again and again.
Yeah.
And doing this work on the inside can help with maybe undoing that story too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so for everyone listening who is, you know, got this far and is having the feeling that I once really truly had, when 100% of my body, I had the mm-hmm. feeling, Julianne, what you're saying is hogwash. It's impossible. You are selling me a line. And frankly, it's not very nice that you're doing this.
Yeah.
So welcome to my inner world, listeners. Those were my absolute, like, with 100% of my being. Mm-hmm. That is what it felt like. Mm-hmm. And I can probably say that probably correlated with also, instead of like a 5% ability of having this, you know, psychological boundary where I don't have to take it in and I can respond with compassion and empathy. Mm-hmm. That probably was about 0% mm-hmm. back when mm-hmm. it felt completely impossible.
Yeah.
And that, I just want to say, like, that can change. It can feel totally impossible right now. And that's a valid experience to be having in this mm-hmm. moment. Like, what you're saying mm-hmm. is impossible.
Yeah.
And it also is true that it is possible.
Yeah. 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 And even just to try it on.
Yeah.
You know what you can do to start to try it on is come out of the moment, come out of a hard moment, and then revisit one hard moment when you're alone, when you're not in a situation, right?
you revisit a hard moment, and almost like you're looking at a photograph of that hard moment or a video of that hard moment. You're going to look at it from the outside so that you can have a little more distance from it and just wonder, just be curious about it. The kid did this. The kid said this. There's my child, my sweet child, saying this thing. I wonder if that's wholly true. I wonder if that's wholly about the parent in that picture. Or if maybe some of it isn't quite so true.
Yeah.
It isn't totally about that parent. Oh, maybe that's information about the kiddo. Oh, if I listened underneath what they were saying, if I really wondered about what would be driving that without trying to change it, what would I notice? So that's like a step towards doing this in real time. I actually really encourage people, when you're trying on these ideas, don't try them out in real time. I think it's too much, too fast.
Yeah.
But try it on with revisiting something that was even medium hard. You may not even want to pick the hardest moment in the last week, but maybe one of the more everyday version of hard moments.
I also sometimes try it out. Like, look at something in the media, like a cartoon or a movie or something, and look at these interactions and like kind of pause and like make it completely third person. Like, what do you imagine for this person? What do you imagine for this person? Where, you know, and, you know, sometimes that level, I think, of psychological distancing can be one. It's like, well, this happens to everyone because they make movies about it. Two.
Yeah.
You know, if it's feeling too, and you know, just too vulnerable to reflect on ourselves, then to look outside, you know, too, because there's plenty of examples that we can find.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that idea. Take it all the way into the third person, because the more you can stay differentiated from the scene, like separate from the scene, is all I mean. The easier it is not to get caught up in the emotion of the moment.
Yeah.
Right. So then you can really wonder about, oh, wait, does everybody's mind saying absolute truth all the time? Or is everybody's mind really telling us a lot about what's going on inside?
Yes.
And not so much about what's going on around.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I love that idea.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. This, you know, it's been a topic I've been, you know, mulling around for a long time. Is like, I refer people to your Therapist Uncensored podcast all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is about, you know, mutual adult relationships. And I preface that, like, this is about mutual adult relationships, but there's so much in here that's related, you know, that you can use in your parent-child relationship. And so to be able to now have like a resource to offer to folks that is specific about your brilliant work around boundaries, but because it is different to be in a parent-child relationship than to be in a mutual partner relationship. There is some really important nuances that we cannot ignore. So I'm just so grateful for your time this morning and look really forward to when we get together again inside the club and help people like really go into this, you know, do some experiential work around this. I just cannot wait to bring that to them. And like, I guess it feels the excitement of like knowing how this has impacted my life, you know, to be able to really bring this to other folks is so exciting. For other folks, I do want to give them some more ideas about where they can go and find you. Is your course, is the Boundaries course something people can just buy whenever?
I think they can.
I think so too.
So there's a Boundaries course on therapy wisdom called the Neurobiology of Feeling Safe. And it's just hanging out at Therapy Wisdom's website. So you can go and get it. And I think you can link, I think I have a link on my website. I'll fix it if I don't.
Yeah, I'll put a link down to you because I've taken the course and I've rewatched and re-listened. This is very powerful. And without question, it's for therapists. And I think there's a lot of great information in it for people who aren't therapists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But sure. It definitely is for, it's for doing client work. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then soon it sounds like we're going to be able to buy a book.
Yes. My book is coming out December 1st, 2023.
Ah,
what?
I know.
It's called Setting Boundaries That Stick, and it's actually breaking down four different types of boundaries, and we just talked about one of them today.
Yes.
Yeah. And it talks about the neurobiology of boundary work, really, because all my work is basically, here's the thing. I came into therapy thinking it was a bunch of woo-woo BS, mm-hmm. honestly.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And I had to convince myself that what I was doing was not that.
Yes.
And so I delved deep into the land of neuroscience to wonder about why does therapy work? How does therapy work? And so everything I do is very neurobiologically based, because that's kind of my world. Yeah. And so the book is about how do you work with your brain and the way your brain's natural processes work to make your boundary work easier.
And it's a book for
lay people, everybody.
It's not a book
just for humans. Therapists. It's not a book for therapists. This is not written with therapists in mind. This is just a book for humans. For all us humans bumbling around.
Yeah. I can't wait. I'm just like, you know, people talk about boundaries constantly right now, but the way mm-hmm. you talk about boundaries is different in yeah. a really important way.
Oh, thank you.
In a really, really important way. So I just can't wait for it to be more accessible.
Oh, I'm delighted.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I can't wait to meet the folks in the club.
I know. I cannot wait to introduce them to you.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome, hon.
Y'all, I need to listen to this interview over and over and over again. And then I need to listen to it again. There is so much in this interview, I know. Remember when I first heard Julianne ask those questions? True or not true? About me, not about me. And then her description of her jello wall. I thought she was living in some sort of alternate reality. It felt impossible to me. Like, I thought she was making this up, like, kind of tricking me in this really not very nice kind of way. It felt impossible, but y'all, I'm here to tell you, it's not impossible. True, not true. About me, not about me. These questions apply to every relationship, every single relationship. I get to ask those questions when deciding if I'm going to let in somebody else's thoughts or feelings or behaviors. It's hard. I'm not trying to tell you that this is an easy journey, an easy experience, an easy practice. It's not easy by any means. So next week, I'm going to talk a bit about my ongoing journey that I've been on to strengthen my psychological and energetic boundaries. So I'll give you a little case studies of sort. This might help give you kind of like the beginnings of a map of how you might be able to do this for yourself. And you heard me say in this episode that Julianne is coming into the club in March as a special guest to lead us through some like experiential exercises that's going to help club members begin this journey for themselves, while also then being able to be surrounded by folks who have kind of the same approach, the same perspective, and can support them on this journey, because it is a journey. I've been on this journey for years, and it's this ongoing, always everyday practice of strengthening psychological and energetic boundaries. We'll be opening the club for new members on February 28th through March 6th, 2023. And then the masterclass with Julianne, it'll be right away on March 8th. So if you're listening to this episode right when it comes out and it's before March 6th, 2023, mark your calendars, come and join us in the club so you can join us in that masterclass. Now, if you're hearing this episode like far into the future, just remember that everything we do in the club is recorded. It's stored in our on-demand video library. So you'll be able to access that masterclass with Julianne and then all of our conversations that we have after in the on-demand video library. But February 28th through March 6th, that's when the club is opening again. We would love, love, love to have you. Thank you for joining me on this 3-episode series on boundaries and being brave enough to journey with me on this new way of looking at boundaries and seeing how this impacts a relationship with ourselves and our relationship with our kids. These kids who are so hard, but who we love so much. Even if that love feeling feels really far away from you right now, you're here, you're listening. Something's bringing you back here so that you can keep going back, keep going towards your kids. I love that. I'll see you next week. Are you ending this episode with maybe a big sigh of relief? Like, yes, finally, someone gets me and my kids. But also maybe a sense of like, okay, but now what? All right, y'all, I've got lots of possible now whats. If you want to connect with me directly, like pick my brain, have access to me almost every day, not to mention hundreds of other parents from around the world who totally get what it's like to be you, then you're going to want to join us in the club. We have monthly live events, including groups for siblings of dysregulated kids, a huge video library with something like 80 or 90 videos, plus transcripts and certificates of completion. Plus, of course, a very active forum that I'm participating in every single day. We open for new members periodically, so go check robingoble.com/the club. If we aren't open now, you can put yourself on the waiting list and I'll let you know the moment we open for new members. That's robingoble.com/the club. Now, if you're a professional and you want to strengthen your capacity to work with the families of kids with big baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, plus use all of my materials, including a 12-module course that follows raising kids with big baffling behaviors, plus be included in an online searchable directory so families all over the world could find you, then you're looking for Being With, which is my year-long immersive training program that runs January through December. So you'll want to go to robingoble.com/beingwith, read all about it, and if you're interested, put yourself on that waiting list too. Now, if you just maybe need a little extra connection and co-regulation, but don't feel like you need to join the club, then you can just keep listening to my podcast, or you could go subscribe to my Start Here podcast, and that'll give you 10 episodes in order that will take you through cultivating a great foundation of parenting with regulation, connection, and felt safety. That's at robingoble.com/start here. You have to go there. You can't just find it in your podcast app. Or you could get yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, paper book, audio book, ebook. You can get that anywhere books are sold. Or you could just head to my website, download one of my very many free resources. I keep them all really easy to access at robingoble.com/free resources. Webinars, masterclasses, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of stuff. Go check it out. See what of those things could be supportive of you or maybe to the other adults in your life who are helping support you and your child. There are just so many ways that you and I could be more connected, and you can get the amount of co-regulation and support that you need. If it feels like a lot to remember, all you have to do is go to robingoble.com and take your time clicking around, seeing what I got there. I am so, so glad you and I are connected now, and I can't wait to be with you again soon in our next episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye-bye, y'all.